Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
In this audiocast number 9, listen to what four priests talk about on an 8-hour road trip. The only thing we could do is
listen.
If you're willing to talk, Father Leo is willing to listen. Get ready for a deliciously deep discussion of Shoot the Shiitake with Father Leo.
Yeah, this show is definitely a little different from my normal format because I'll be talking to people who I enjoy talking to and am used to talking to. These are three of some of my really great priest friends from my seminary days at the North American College. And you're going to hear that I was actually recording this on an 8-hour road trip. We were all together on a little fishing trip. That sounds ridiculous because I'm really not much of a fisherman. I'm called to be a fisher of man. But it was my first time kayak fishing with these guys. And so we started off in the northern part of California. And then we were making our trek up on an 8-hour trip with a bunch of divergent little stops to Portland, Oregon, where we got together with two other priest friends. But on this road trip out for about 6 hours, the only thing we could do is talk to each other. And I know in this day and age, everybody just basically turns to technology. And I think this is a time when we can actually turn towards theology. Why? Because you've got the time to do it. And so when we come back, we're going to hear a deep dish discussion about what priests engaged in and what kind of conversation we should be having. And this actually wasn't really for us. This was for all of you who might be going on long road trips in any summer vacation or any time of the year. So if you've got a long road trip, or if you're going on a vacation, I think you're going to enjoy this good-hearted, good-natured conversation. Before we get to that, though, I just want to give to you a little appetizer, a little amuse-bouche, a little one bite of a way to kind of set this stage for our deep dish discussion. So, let me ask you, where do sharks go on vacation? Finland. Get it? And here's another one. Why don't mummies go on summer vacation? Because they're afraid to relax and unwind. Yeah, super fun, and I think that's what vacations are all about, even if sometimes the reason why many families go out on vacations are for competitive experiences, team sports and such. And so we're going to talk about vacations, we're going to talk about competition, and we're just going to get a little inside scoop on what four competitive but brotherly loving priests talk about for 8 hours long when we come back for more Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo. This episode is brought to you by Select International Tours, where they share your faith. They basically are more than a tour company because what they do is provide personal attention to all of the details. And I can only speak personally for me. I've worked with many different groups and I've landed primarily with Select International Tours simply because they understand what I'm looking for in giving real experiences to people that feed everybody in body, mind, and soul.
goal. They have compassion for the pilgrim and passion for the pilgrimage. So if you want to learn more about planning a trip with your church or a large organization, or joining one of the other tours, including one of mine, all you have to do is go to selectinternationaltours.com or call 800-842-4842. Again, that's Select International Tours at 800-842-4842.
Hey, and welcome back to a special Shoot the Shiitake with me, your host, Father Leo. And if this is sounding like I am in a car, it's because I am with three good priest friends. We are on a little bit of a vacation, and we had a super long drive, and now I'm in the driver's seat, and they actually gave me a booster seat so that I could see over the front of the car. Now that I'm in the driver's seat, though, then I'm going to just pepper these guys with some questions. We've got Father Eric Pohlmeier of the Diocese of Little Rock. We've got Father Timothy McEwen from the Diocese of Savannah, Georgia, and from Rapid City, South Dakota, Father Brian Christensen. Brian and Tim are pastors, and Father Eric is a director of evangelization for his diocese. And I thought that it would be fun because I know this time of the year, families are going on vacation, and they've got to drive their kids around, and it just drives them crazy. And so we're just going to have a little conversation about, first of all, vacation. What does it mean? What it should mean? And then how can we keep our Catholic faith while we're on vacation? So these guys are just going to give advice. And then I want to hear a little bit about a competition, because these three guys are very athletic. I have no idea why I'm their friend. But anyway, guys, thanks for being on this little special with me.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. And when you think about your family vacation, what was that like for you guys? And how did your family keep you Catholic while on vacation?
Well, we used to go up to the Adirondack Mountains. I grew up in Long Island, New York. We used to go up to state New York. Every year, it's been a tradition in my family. My grandmother used to go up there as well. I'll never forget it. Wherever we went, wherever we stopped along the way, Mom would always ask wherever we were staying, at the motel, the hotel, at the resort, wherever it might be. He's like, so what time is the masses this weekend? And then the next question for us was, okay, so you guys can go Saturday night at 5, or do you want to go tomorrow, get up early tomorrow morning? What do you want to do? And that was
good.
Especially important for our ski vacations.
Ski vacations. What about you guys? Any Catholic tips for families going on trips?
One of my memories, we used to travel up to Canada to go see my great aunt and uncle. And one of my memories was seeing them kneel down each night before bed.
Whoa.
And pray the rosary. As a 7-8-year-old, made a big impact on me. They had made a commitment they would pray the rosary each night. So seeing that throughout the summer was something that certainly informed my faith as a young person.
Well, in order for them to do that, they'd have to be sober, right? I mean, so like just being able to make sure that you get to bed early. I mean, like, what about for parents who like, I don't know. I mean, that sounds awesome. But what time did they go to bed about?
My great aunt and uncle, they probably went to bed around 10 o'clock or so. We'd fish until dark time.
Oh,
and
so this was a nature thing.
Go clean the fish, go eat some dinner, and they would say their prayers and time for bed.
How about you, Eric? Thinking about what tips you can give to families, because that'd be great to pray the rosary together as a family.
Right. Well, we never went on vacation.
Really?
So, no, never. We would maintain it during vacation times. I remember during the summertime, it was very clear that we went to a Catholic school and went to Mass every day at Catholic school, but summertime didn't mean just the end of that. So we didn't go to Mass every day, but we would gather families together and go to Mass together and still serve and be part of the church throughout the summer vacation.
Now, I know a lot of people would be asking, what do you mean you didn't go on any vacations whatsoever? What was there a reason for that, or was it just
I don't know.
You just never did? And
no.
Did you feel like you've missed out on anything?
No, it never dawned on us. Our only point of reference was us, and we never went anywhere.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. We used to go on vacations, and we would always have to pray the rosary on the way out. And so that was a big deal. And I remember at the end of the rosary, which is long enough as a kid, for some reason on road trips, my mom would add these extra intentions, and we'd have to say, Our Father, Hail Mary, and glory be for all of them. And the one that struck out the most was for a good and happy death. And I'm thinking, not before we get to the pool. Come on, Mom, what's going on there? All right, so that was one thing. Can you remember, like, maybe one of your favorite
summer experiences, and also maybe one of the biggest challenging kind of experiences you had?
I remember the same trip in Canada, really getting my first taste of independence by being allowed to take the rowboat out by myself. My parents were very protective, so to be able to solo in the rowboat. But I got into a summer where I started going out fishing by myself, and really? I started keeping count of the fish. So one summer, I got 50 fish, so that was my record.
50?
And then the next summer, I caught 99, and it was the night before we were going to leave, and I really wanted to get 100. So I cast my line out, left it out at the end of the dock overnight, and it was, we're just going to load the car in the morning and go. And I ran down to the dock, and the pole was bent, and there was a fish on it. And sure enough, a catfish had hooked himself over the course of the night. So I caught number 100.
Wow.
Threw him back in, and we...
Wait, did you just throw them all back in?
Pretty much when I was fishing off the dock or off the rowboat.
So
my uncle and my dad would go out for the big ones. And at that age, I couldn't go out in the motorboat with them. The young kids fished off the dock or fished off the rowboat, and the men got to go out in the boat and troll for walleye and northern pike. And
this is all very natural sounding. Today's understanding of vacations seem very different. I mean, like, Eric, you don't know because you never went on vacation, but it just seems like in the modern age, vacations are a lot different. I mean, do you sense that these days? Any kind of differences? It seems more simpler back then.
Right. Not so programmatic, and just the fact we'd go out and enjoy nature and relax and spend time with cousins and relatives, and it was good times.
Yeah, so I mean, in a way, what would you recommend for families to make sure that they keep things, I'd say Catholic, and making sure you don't lose your faith and morals on vacation? As a matter of fact, because you guys are pastors, I kind of recommend that there should be penance services right before the school year. You know how we used to have them, we generally have them traditionally in Lent and in Advent. I recommend that we just kind of create an opportunity for people to come back from vacation and get to confession and have a penance service. But that's just my two cents there. But on long road trips, do you guys have to do long road trips?
You know, growing up, it was either, like I said, going upstate New York to the mountains.
That's a long road
trip. And also,
we
used to do a lot of beach vacations, and still, that's the general vacation for my family still. My brother and my two sisters, their spouses, and mom and dad, and their kids. I have 9 nieces and nephews. We still plan a week out at the beach every year. I'll be back to New York in August to do that and spend a whole week out on the Fire Island with them. And it is a relaxing time. There's no program. It's get up, make breakfast, head out to the beach, find some lunch.
Yeah, it's just kind of chill. I mean,
yeah.
As I'm talking to people, and it might be because I live in a big city, it just seems that everyone's spending a ton of money for, like, I mean, tickets for Disney World. It's like $75 for a person for a day.
No, easily. But I think, you know, knowing some of my parishioners and some, you know, family members as well, those are big events that happen, you know, once, you know, in their life that they would save up for that. That's not a normal family vacation. That would be a special occasion, I think.
Well, people do spend, I mean, I think a lot of people save up money for big vacations every year. Here's what I recommend, pilgrimages. Let me hear your thoughts on pilgrimages as a way for a family to quote-unquote vacation at the same time. I mean, because all of you guys have led pilgrimages. We've all been on them. Having been students of Rome, we know what a good pilgrimage is like. But how can that be something for a family outing to grow their faith?
Well, a pilgrimage with a family becomes an easy way to have a conversation that includes faith. So 2 weeks ago, I was in Arlington, Virginia for my nephew's confirmation, one nephew's confirmation, another nephew's first communion, and the day of first communion, my grandparents were there, and we went to the Shrine of the Immaculate Conception in Washington, D.C., and so just to walk from place to place and see the things that were there opened the door for conversations about the symbols in the church and different things that make sharing faith not so much a lesson to be taught. It's just a conversation about what's in front of you.
Yeah, I mean, I do remember very specifically as a child going to the National Shrine, going to the Grotto at Lourdes. And I think a lot of people, by the way, folks, if you're listening to this, don't think that you have to go across the pond for a pilgrimage site. There are tons of places. Any recommendations for, like, American pilgrimage sites besides the one that Eric just mentioned?
Well, there are more and more saints that are buried in different places. Recently, close to us in Arkansas, there was a beatification of Father Stanley Rother, now Blessed Stanley Rother, in Oklahoma City. So a lot of people were able to go to Oklahoma City for that beatification, and now he's buried in a place that's easily accessible. His family home in Okarchee, Oklahoma, has become a pilgrimage stop, which is really a small farming community as it was when he lived there.
All right. Any things on the west side that anyone recommend, like in the California region, and then anything in south or the east side?
Well, I'm totally familiar, but up and down the California coast, of course, the various California missions that are there as well. You know, there's various shrines, Shrine in La Crosse, Wisconsin, you know.
But by the way, you don't have to go on a pilgrimage. You could be visiting San Diego and, you know, on a family vacation and go to a mission.
Oh, yeah. No, I think that's the important part. Like, you're on a family vacation. Even just going to the local parish,
absolutely.
And stopping in either for prayer or on the Saturday evening vigil mass or the Sunday mass. I mean, wherever we go as Catholics, wherever we go, I mean, we're home.
Yeah.
You know, that we, our parish, you know, in our local community, but when we go out, we belong to the universal church. And to experience that church, whether you're from the south going to the north or the north going to the west or wherever we are, you know, even just for us ourselves this past week, you know, spending a holy hour in the church, you know, as priests, family doesn't have to spend a whole holy hour, but at least a visit to the local parish to see that community, pray with that community.
Exactly. If you're visiting a metropolitan, there's going to be certainly a cathedral. Find it and go to it. My dad, he was Protestant, and he actually told us all when we were kids, when we go to a new church, you could make three wishes. That was his way of saying it. It wasn't wishes, though. It was three special prayers. And to this day, when I go into a new church, and I'm in one like every weekend, I'm always saying three special prayers. So that stuck with me. Thanks, Dad, for that vacation tip.
And I would certainly follow up with the cathedral comment, because I'm surprised how many parishioners I've met that have never been to our own cathedral. And people just take it for granted. Sometimes when they go to an ordination, it's the first time they've been to the cathedral. So to choose a cathedral, your own cathedral or a nearby cathedral, as a pilgrimage site, generally cathedrals are open throughout the day.
Yeah.
Beautiful places to go. In South Georgia, we go down to Florida. There's the Shrine of Our Lady of La Leche. And it's the site of the first mass that was said in North America. The priests that were traveling with the Spanish explorers said mass down in St. Augustine. And so the St. Augustine Cathedral, the Shrine of Our Lady of Leche are beautiful pilgrimage sites. But wherever you live, to definitely go check out the cathedral in nearby diocese or in your own diocese.
Absolutely. And that's maybe in the summer times, folks, all you've got to do is literally just go to a different church. Just make sure you leave your envelope at your home parish. Your pastors will be happy. Let's switch this up. Long road trips, that is a time when kids just become sometimes the worst. You know, I mean, you sugar them all up and they can't keep... Does anybody remember long trips and just how painful they were? Mom, he's on my side.
We would. My mom is an artist, and it's funny. I know today many people rely on the VCR and videos for their kids.
Oh, yeah.
We used to play a lot of games, and I remember one game my mom would play with us is she would divide a sheet into three pieces, so you couldn't see what was on the other two pieces.
Sure.
So you would draw, you know, for example, the legs of a hockey player, and then someone else would draw the midsection, and someone else would draw the torso, and so you might end up with an astronaut, hockey player, and a ballerina.
Oh.
You know, and then we would switch it up, and so we'd play squares where the board was full of dots, and you know, you'd fill in one line at a time, playing hangman. So we just played a lot of simple games like that
I think that we need to turn the TV off and just have conversations. I mean, I see that, like, we're in a nice car right now, but thankfully there's no DVR for the kids in the back seat, because frankly, I would have been watching like something on Netflix or Hulu, and then I wouldn't have these amazing conversations with my brother priest. And sometimes they get kind of tense because we don't always agree with each other, but it's a time to talk. What about you guys in terms of like how to manage long trips and making sure kids don't kill each other?
Well, one of the things I remember from driving to Grandma's house when we were kids is that we did not have the restrictions of seatbelts at the time. So we had a full-size van. We would turn the seats around.
Yep.
We would put a little table in between the seats and play cards there. No seatbelt. We had a station wagon before that, and there was a big empty section in the back. And three or four kids would be piled in there playing cards right there on the floor of the car. So that made a lot of those things much, much easier to do.
But oh, yeah. And we used to play
filled our time with, we would sing songs. We would try to identify states on the different license plates and just all kinds of games as the hours tick by.
I spy. And by the way, I just spied lamb, sheep along the site. Now I'm like super hungry. I just need a little olive oil, garlic, and rosemary. How about you, Brian? What did you guys do to not kill each other on the...
We did a lot of name games and looking for license plates of different states. And, of course, the I Spy kind of stuff was always good. But, yeah, I think, you know, jamming to the tunes a little bit and cranking that up and singing as a family and just getting a little bit... Let it be a little bit wild. I mean, you know, long drives, we would drive again, like I said, up to upstate New York. But also, we had relatives down in Virginia area, so that's a long drive down I-95.
Well, as people are listening to this, they're probably experiencing, like, family saying, yeah, my kids, they're going to get jealous of each other because one kid was able to do this as opposed to the other, which kind of leads to the conversation that I really wanted to discuss with you guys, too, is competition.
Yeah, don't even go there. You're going to lose.
I mean, as far as, let's admit, priests can be kind of competitive. How do we maintain the goodness of it all? I'd love to just hear, first of all, your experience of competition, and how do you maintain faithfulness in competition?
Well, I mean, competition is something
What did you do, like, competitive-wise?
Well, just growing up, I mean, my brother and I are 13 months apart. He's a year younger than I am, 13 months. So there's really no time in my existence that I don't remember my brother being there. And we were on the same sports teams all the time, whether that was baseball or soccer or whatever it was. And we were always right there going toe-to-toe together, competing, you know, and trying to... you know, prove each other. But I think, you know, as I look back on those years, it was also not just a competition, which it was for sure. There's no doubt about it. There was like a sibling rivalry there. But it was also a way in which we honed our skills. We kept trying to get better, kept trying to get stronger, to get more skilled.
All right, now we're getting to the heart of what competition really means. And when we come back, we're going to continue this deeper dish discussion, this road trip edition, and this is probably great for families who are on a long trip right now, and it gets the parents something to talk about with their kids as you're driving along, trying to experience a little R&R, a little vacation time, and we come back, I'm going to hear from these other guys about competition, because two of the guys in this car right now were extremely competitive to the point where they even had a little victory belt in... trust, it was like from Walmart, people. I mean, it was like not much of a belt at all. But they were pretty competitive to get this belt, and we're going to find out when we come back who actually won this belt when we return with more Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo.
It's always an edifying and inspiring experience to travel around the country and around the world and to share this message of my organization called Plating Grace, which you can learn more about at fatherleofeeds.com. Again, that's fatherleofeeds.com, where you can, one, sign up for the free weekly email blasts. Two, you can subscribe to these episodes. Three, you can order any of our books, including some of our other merchandise, such as a really cool apron with our really cool logo. Four, you can learn about all the trips that I'm taking or book an event with me. And five, you can also get information about the Table Foundation, thetablefoundation.org, which is my nonprofit group. So stay connected. You could learn where the TV show is, how to watch the YouTube channel videos, and of course, get more Shoot the Shiitake all at fatherleofeeds.com.
Welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, your host, Father Leo, and I'm such a loser. We just had a really great conversation, about 10 minutes of it. It wasn't recorded, so we're going to kind of like rewind it all and talk about vacations. And, you know, families are doing a lot of vacations, and they're actually bringing kids to a lot of competitions. And in this car, these guys are very athletic and very competitive. Father Brian was a B-1 bomber pilot champion, correct? Brian? Like, you actually competed?
We did some competition down at the Nellis during my days in the B1. Yeah, the Gunsmoke competition.
And you won it, right?
You know, that's a good question. Yeah, we won it.
Okay.
We won it.
In other words, you're pretty competitive in a freaking bomber pilot. That's a great, as a bomber pilot in a bomber airplane. And so, also in the car, we've got Father Eric and we got Father Tim McEwen. These two went head-to-head for a belt, and I'm not exactly sure what it was, but it was... Tim, why don't you explain this?
Sure. We played a lot of basketball at North American College, and we actually had an intramural league, and we would have 15 guys every Tuesday sign out of lunch and go play basketball for an hour and a half every Tuesday. Very competitive, and it's great because it's guys from across the United States, so all different regions of the country. You tried to represent, well, your own region, and it's very competitive, but it was a great fraternity, too. A lot of those events forged our friendships and forged our relationships. So Eric and I would take it to a different level because we would also, sometimes after the game, just play one-on-one and play games. I can't remember how much, up to 24 or something. And we actually had a belt, like a world wrestling belt. And so whoever won that particular week or that month could keep the belt. So
describe this belt for me, too, because people need to hear this.
I think it was a black Walmart belt that was decorated with whiteout and just had the basketball title on it.
Okay, and who won this belt?
We would pretty much go back and forth with who would win the belt. I think when I left Rome, I was in possession of the belt, is my recollection.
And where is this belt now, besides holding up your pants? Do you know where it is?
I think it's in the Basketball Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio.
Canton, Ohio?
Eric, your response, please.
So I seem to recall that it went back and forth, and then I made the great mistake of agreeing to one last game before we left. And I also recall getting a photograph one time of the belt with dust bunnies all around it because it had been sitting in the same place for so long.
Where were the dust bunnies? Whose room? Yours?
Well, it must have been Tim's room.
Oh, is that right?
So he had it in possession after we left. And
I see.
It was collecting dust because it wasn't being passed back and forth anymore.
I see. Now, how do we keep the competition? Because obviously, folks, there's pros and cons to everything. You know, like, as priests, we can be pretty competitive with each other. You know, I mean, like, whose parish is bigger? Who made more money at this annual appeal or whatever it is? And, you know, but it kind of starts at home. What's your experience, Eric, of just competition?
Well, competition at home was something that would certainly mark everything we did. We spent most of our free time playing games.
Uh-huh.
And so now as my siblings moved on and had their own families, they've carried that on with their own children. So now as we gather together at Grandpa and Grandma's house, the first thing that happens are the games are pulled out. And every year at Christmas, more games are brought forward. And as kids grow, they learn the rules of the game and they are allowed to win some and then taught that they don't always win. And so it helps them to learn the lessons.
What was that again? They're allowed to win some and then the others, they're just kind of...
They're allowed to win some, but not always allowed to win. So they have to learn how to deal with not winning. And I have one nephew in particular that can win probably four or five games in a row, and then the next game he doesn't win, and he falls back and says, "I don't ever win." So I have to learn how to balance things not going the way that you want them to always.
So on the break, you were telling me about your mom's tactics. Tell me
about
that.
So growing up, I very much remember my mom when we would be playing games. She would realize that she was not going to win and the game was about to be over, and she would suddenly knock over the board or mess up the pieces so that she could declare that no one won.
I love this. Now, your families, were you competitive with each other? And in terms of, like, how did you know who was better? So how do you acknowledge it? So my brother and I, we competed in martial arts. He is faster than I am. He's like slighter, so he's just faster. But if I hit him, it'll take one hit and he'll crumble. But he could, like, in one of my hits, he could hit me like 17 times, you know? So we're pretty competitive, but I always kind of bow down to him in his ability. Do you guys kind of have that understanding that one's better at other things?
Well, the understanding, I would say, would be we would never concede anything to anybody else. So there
really
wouldn't be that any understanding. But what would happen was taking a great deal of pride when people were competing in their sports or whatever. We would, so when we were competing against each other, it was definitely winner take all every time. But then we would go to each other's games.
Yeah.
And so then everybody on the family was in their court. And so on the free throw line or at the plate, there was constant support and encouragement. It was the kind of thing where we would rally to each other against whoever we were competing with. So the bonds that were fashioned were support of each other and continuing to grow and improve in whatever sport or talent was
being developed. Yeah, we have an understanding, though, of that. Like, you guys grew up almost in a different era because these days, it's pretty ugly. What's been your experience of just seeing, like, helicopter moms at the soccer field and, you know, dads literally getting in the faces of the refs and just, you just see a lot of unsportsmanlike conduct. And what are we going to do about that, especially as pastors?
Sure. I think there's a feeling today that everyone thinks that their child is going to play collegiate. Everyone's child is going to be professional. So even at the youngest levels, you see people just really yelling at the referees or yelling at the coaches. And, you know, I think we need to see first and foremost, especially at the young years, that the games are for recreation. They're to develop skills and just not to take ourselves so seriously. And later on, if our kids in high school really start to progress, sure, then we can, you know, think about college. But really, an infinite small amount of people ever make it to collegiate level, much less the pros. So just to see the lessons of teamwork, sportsmanship, the athleticism
yep.
that competition brings out really is what parents should be thinking about instead of thinking about your 7-year-old playing for the Yankees one day.
Sure. How young do you think they should be playing a team sport? Just your thoughts.
I think it depends on the sports, but I think, you know, as early as possible. But then the question is, I think some levels you shouldn't worry about score. And I think at the young levels, it should be more about participation. Everyone get an equal amount of playing time. You're just trying to develop skills. You're trying to develop sportsmanship, teamwork at that age. You don't need to keep score at these young age. You're just trying to get the young people to get them welcome into sports and also to give them some confidence. You know, we all need more confidence. And as the kids get more success, then their confidence will grow and their self-esteem will also grow.
And the parishes have a responsibility in that, which is why I know there's a lot of parish sports programs. They sometimes take over. Like, Brian, as a pastor, and especially at a prominent church, how are you going to kind of keep a balance with, I mean, do you even have, like, a sport club in your church? And do they take over the gym?
No, we don't have, like, a CYO or anything like that. We have, you know, we have the school, middle school, high school, and they have, obviously, sports associated with the school system, the Catholic school system.
Sure.
So that's always a balance and a challenge, you know, of the time and the energy that's spent on sports. But I agree with a lot of Tim's, you know, what is the purpose of sports? You know, are our students, our young people on their way to the major leagues? And even if they are, what are some of the most important lessons for life in virtue that they'll learn along the way? You know, I'm reminded in my days at the Air Force Academy as a student, we had to memorize the Douglas MacArthur's quote that is, on the fields of friendly strife are sown the seeds that on other days and other fields will reap the fruits of victory.
Oh.
Right? So on the fields of friendly strife, so in these competitions of sports or other athletics or even music and theater and the arts.
Sure, sure, sure.
These places where there is competition, that what is really being sown? What are the fruits that we want to see from these seeds that are being sown? And it is. It's these things about collaboration and teamwork
sure.
and partnership and patience and
understanding. What do you tell parents who kind of are skipping church because they've got to take their kids? First of all, do you think that we've got a healthy balance right now with sporting activities? Like, where are we with sports right now? I think it's way off balance.
Yeah, you know, I sometimes think, you know, about back in the Old Testament in the Maccabees, right?
Yep.
The Maccabees, what happens? They try to rub out the Jewish religious practices, and what do they build in the middle of the cities? Gymnasiums.
Sure.
They put sports in the place of God. And so we've seen it in the history of the world before. And in some cases, I think we've built gymnasiums that have become our new
cathedrals.
You know, for our society. And that's a real challenge. You know, it is, you know, St. John Paul II kind of called these things these structures of sin. Not that people are sinning, but we built our society and our culture in such a way that certain things are more important besides God, and we don't really recognize it easily. And that's the challenge for us today, I think. perhaps were disproportionate, and many people find themselves in that situation.
So how do we keep people humble if they're good at a sport? Any ideas on, like, this is true for anything, whether it's a sport, whether it's a skill or a talent. I mean, how do we keep people humble? Because frankly, I'm probably the most humble of everyone in this car right now.
Oozing.
Yes, it's just oozing right now. Yeah, I mean, so I have to ask you guys, how does one stay humble in their greatness?
Again, just one thought comes to me. You know, John Paul II, again, had this great insight with regard to a gift, a skill, a charism, a talent that a person might have, that God has given that talent not for that person.
Yep.
But for others. The person who can dance well, the person who can play basketball well, the person who can play the piano well, those gifts that person has are really for others to enjoy.
Yeah. And how about you, Tim? Like, when you were beating Eric in basketball multiple times, how did you stay so humble?
Yeah, I think one thing for
wow,
athletes...
the fact that Eric didn't grab the microphone from you is pretty impressive.
Yeah, that was impressive.
Yeah.
You know, I think one thing is athletes, we always want all our competitors to do well. So I think if you talk to most athletes, let's say a golfer, for example,
uh-huh.
They would rather have their opponent shoot par and win by one than playing a golfer that shoots an 85 and you just kind of back into your victory. So I think going in and having good competition where everyone plays well, so you want everyone to do their best, and you know, you hope that you can be the best on a given day, but you don't want your opponents to play poorly or, you know, any misfortune upon your opponents, but you want them to push you to those new levels, like Brian was saying, to forge you into being the person you're called to be. So good opponents are, you know, essential. So when you do play well, all glory to God, and to see that as a gift.
Tim Tebow, your thoughts on him, or just any other advice on just staying humble?
Well, I think that for children staying humble, it's going to depend on the attitude of their parents.
Nice.
Whatever attitude they take is going to shape the attitude of their parents. So if the parents act a certain way in the stands, that creates pressure for the kid. If they don't have a realistic picture of how good they are and what their future is, then they're going to feel entitled. If the parents praise them for doing well and remind them very consciously that whatever ability they have comes from God, that it's not something that you have created on your own, then it's much easier to do, as Father Brian was saying, to let it be for something else and not just for my own edification or for the praise that might be heaped on me.
Sure. And you know what? Like, some of you guys, honestly, I think you guys are so talented athletically, you probably could have made it into kind of more advanced competition. Do you regret any of that you didn't pursue it? I mean,
there is such a tiny percentage of people that can pursue it beyond high school. I never had any illusions of being able to do that.
Really? You never had that?
No. That if you look at the number of look at the number of professional or even college athletes versus how many kids play sports, it mm-hmm. is the tiniest possible percentage
sure.
that can continue on. So it was never even crossed my mind. I do remember a friend of mine was telling me just recently that when he was a little kid, he had dreamed of playing in the NBA, and it took him to be about 7 when he realized, oh my gosh, there are other kids that are a lot better than me. This is not going to be possible.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Now, as we're kind of coming to a little close here, just want to get some final thoughts on what you think is going to be one of the best things a family can do together to bring about and foster a sense of athleticism, foster a sense of positive, healthy competition.
Well, I think you can separate competition from athleticism, as I mentioned before, about
sure.
playing games. So every family can play games and find the kind of games that are well suited to their own family dynamic, because some games put you in opposition to each other. There are other games that put you in a more cooperative approach to beating the game.
Sure.
And then there are other games that are more about skill in kind of strategy, and others that are more about mental gymnastics and association of words and things. So there are many different ways that families can tap into the kind of things they're interested in, whether it be athletic or not.
And Brian, how about you? Because you're the one who actually took the bat from me when I was actually up to go for bat, and you just, because I'm not that great of a ball player, you took it from me and you struck out masterfully. I love that. I really, enjoyed that. You, any thoughts from you?
If there's not humility, there's humiliation sometimes in our lives.
Absolutely.
You know, the challenge, I think, too, my brother, he's a father of three kids, very athletic kids, but he laments the fact that they don't really go out as when he and I were young boys and grab our baseball mitts and go find some other kids and go play on the lot or in the backyard of some neighbor.
What do you mean?
You know, that everything is structured for them.
Oh.
You know, it's organized, it's uniforms, it's practices. There's always an adult there. And he said, you know,
when we were
growing up, most of the time we went down to the park, we went over to the Quinn's house,
yeah.
and we played pickup ball, we played roller hockey, we played running bases on the side of our home, we played football on the street. Like, there was a lot of unsupervised time where you had to sort out the rules, you had to decide what was fair, what were the ground rules, how you
sure.
were going to decide disputes. And he said, you know, now adults are in everything that the children do now. And he
wow.
said, I just don't see that they have that same experience that we had to try and figure things out, to find a way to work together, to grow together, to compromise, and to enjoy the sport for the sport's sake.
Yeah, and just getting out and doing it for the sake of enjoying it. And by the way, kids, just so that you know, if you're listening to this, you're not going to get better at baseball by practicing it on a game. All right, so a video game is not going to actually help your skill necessarily. Tim?
Yeah, maybe another thought would be just to really encourage your kids in terms of life sports too. You know, sometimes I've had a theory you should, you know, teach, every kid should learn a language, they should learn an instrument and learn a sport.
Nice.
But the reality is after high school, most of us are not going to play competitive sports, let's say football, ice hockey. But a sport like cross-country running, tennis, golf, you can play into your 50s and 60s and you can continue to compete in, and they will certainly help you with your health to be able to stay active. So, you know, even if your kid does specialize in a sport like football, also to have them pick up another sport that they'll be able to play in their 30s and 40s.
So more sports or less sports ultimately?
I think as much sports as a family can balance. I think keeping kids active is a great thing. Again, we don't want to make it an idol. And certainly, you know, and this might be a whole separate show, but, you know, I've seen Sundays get replaced.
Wait, was that your
now.
Way of wanting to get back on my show? Because I'd love to have you back
yeah.
on.
So, you know, I see now, for example, soccer tournaments will go over the course of a whole weekend, including
sure.
on a Sunday.
Yeah, I like
and
that.
So some parents will miss Mass, or they'll have to change the Mass schedule. So to really, you know, give sports its proper place.
Yeah. Well, listen, you guys have been fantastic. Helped me to keep this long road trip in check. But I do have to ask, amongst all your answers, who gave the best one?
I did. It had to be Leo.
Clearly me.
The microphone is in my hand now, so my voice will ring loudest. And, of course, I gave all the best answers.
So, listen, when we come back, I'm going to reflect on what these three wise, athletic, and competitive brothers of mine, what they've said. I'm going to discern it all out, and then I'm going to give you the truth of it all. I'm kidding with you. When I return, I'll get back with my carryout order, what I learned from them, and hopefully what you all have learned from them, when we return with more Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo. We're so grateful for all of those who have been part of this show's growth in the past several episodes. And if you want to help us to grow, to develop conversations that bring about conversions, here are three S's that you can do. The first is to subscribe. All you've got to do is just go to the website, fatherleofeeds.com/listen, and subscribe or choose your platform for how you can get instant access to all of these shows. The second is to share. Tell your pastor, tell your family, friends, and fellow parishioners about these engaging conversations that can give you a unique perspective. And the third is to support us, either with a $10 recurring monthly donation or to even support us as an advertiser. And we're happy to say that at the end of this month, we're going to have our platforms available so that you can help us with your support to continue to shoot the shit Shiitake with me, Father Leo. And welcome back to my carryout order from this deep dish discussion. Now, granted, I will be the first to admit that the audio isn't perfect just because I was in a car. And I mean, we had to do something. It was 8 hours long. And one of the first things I will also admit is that I really wish that I had a microphone kind of recording the entire conversation. Because I'll be very honest, as soon as you put a microphone in front of anybody, they kind of act a little bit more formal. I'm not going to say that my friends weren't themselves, but they were definitely aware that a microphone was in front of them. You know, I mean, we talk differently when you're just truly being 100% yourself. And I'm not saying they weren't being themselves, but I knew that they were speaking a little differently in a tone, and that kind of happens. And I feel kind of bad because we were on vacation. We weren't supposed to be doing work, but that was the whole point of this. You know, this show is about trying to reach people who might not agree with me. And so it was, first of all, a pleasure to have a conversation with these brothers and these men, my brother priests, who would generally agree with me. But the fact is, you know, you only heard about 40 minutes of our conversation. There were times when we had great disagreement. And I wish we would have had that recording. But besides all of that, thank you for the not-so-perfect audio recording of it all. Another thing that I learned was that vacations can be a very challenging thing. The word vacation from vacare, where we get the word vacant, which means empty, and where you get vacuum, which is kind of like an empty space, and where we get vacate, where you're supposed to empty something out. It is a challenging thing for a lot of families to do in today's world. And one of the things that I hope you learn was that priests have a responsibility to go on a vacation. We have to make distinctions between what a vacation is, what a retreat is, and what just time away can do for you. And so this vacation for me was also a little bit like a retreat. We had prayer every morning. We had mass every day. We spent a holy hour together. And it was also a time for the guys just to loosen up and relax because, you know, being a priest can be pretty intense. So while, you know, people think that priests don't have vacations or they're not supposed to go on vacations. Actually, it's a requirement. In fact, I don't know if you know this, but in canon law, priests are supposed to take a retreat, which serves as a way to vacate, to empty yourself out, to experience a different kind of experience altogether. And as a priest, I'll be very honest with you, we probably can experience our vacations a little bit more than, say, lay people might be able to experience it. So in a way, this show was for you to, first of all, hear that priests are normal people when we can go on vacation. Secondly, we can talk about things other than just church all the time. And also that we can have some disagreements and that there is definitely healthy competition. And if there's really something that I was surprised about, and I've known these guys for almost 20 years of my life, is that Eric didn't even go on vacations as a kid. I couldn't believe it. You know, the priest from Little Rock, he's the director of, I don't want to say evangelization, but maybe faith formation for his diocese in Little Rock, Arkansas. He never went on vacations and he didn't know otherwise. And the other two guys who did go on vacations, they were more family-oriented kind of getaways. They weren't expensive. And it kind of shows to me, especially in our world today, that I think we have to get a better understanding of what it means to truly be on vacation. I was a little embarrassed, actually, when I kind of asked Tim McEwen about how his great aunt and uncle would pray the rosary before they went to sleep. And I made this snarky comment about, like, how can you do that when you're drunk? And the reason why I said it was because a lot of people see vacation as a time to lose themselves, to just kind of get wasted, to kind of forget who they are. They almost escape who they are. And that was one of the farthest things from Tim's mind. He wasn't thinking along those lines because his family vacations were more wholesome. They were more natural. They were more about family and not about trying to escape their reality, whether it be in drugs or in drinking or anything else to an excess for that matter. And it just shows that vacations, if they really want to be true, honest, good, and noble, and truly an opportunity to relax, then they have to be a little bit more simpler. And that was a common theme in these guys, just simple, back down to earth, no program, stress-free. You've heard many people say, oh my gosh, I need a vacation after my vacation. It's probably because you did it wrong. And if you're spending tons of money, you know, and I'm not saying anything negative about Disney World, but the tickets, I don't even know how much they cost really. I probably should have done my research about it. I just know they're not cheap. If you're thinking that you have to spend a lot of money on vacation, then you kind of need to get a better understanding of it. You could probably have just as much fun, don't have to wait in a lot of long lines, and you don't have to feel like you can't just have time together. And perhaps, if you are spending a lot of time on vacation, it might be because you're not comfortable just being together, just having this time of togetherness. And maybe what we're paying for are just distractions so that you don't have to spend time together. And that's a real source of controversy because, you know, when we lived in Italy, my connection with these three awesome fellows is that we lived all together in the North American College in Italy. So shout out to the NAC. What a great place to be. But when we were there, at least for our first 2 years, we were not allowed to return back to the United States. So the rector literally said, you've got to get out of this institution and out of Rome. It was almost like a requirement for us to get out and experience the world. And, you know, for a guy like me who had been out of the country maybe once or twice, I'm actually a little bit of a homebody. When people say, hey, Father Leo, what do you like to do in your day? I like to stay home. I like to sleep. That's kind of what I enjoy doing. I don't need to go out. I travel for a living, right? But at the NAC, at the North American College, we were encouraged to go out into the world. And he even said, and if you don't have the money to do it, we will find donors and sponsors for you to get away. And that didn't mean we were have like an all expense paid trip. No, it meant that part of our formation was to make sure we weren't just becoming homebodies and to make sure that we are going out into the world, which is why, you know, I led the discussion, the questioning into vacations versus pilgrimages, because they can kind of be the same thing. And I think that if there's anything, at least for Christians, they got to reclaim, is that you can't lose your sense of Christianity when you're going on vacation. And so they gave some great tips. You know, go visit the cathedral, go visit another church, make sure that there is prayer involved in your experiences, making sure that you do have an experience of religion. And it doesn't become, in a sense, a chore to talk about faith, because all you're doing is talking about stuff that you're looking at right now. And I'll say this, that if you are going to experience a real pilgrimage, you're going to have a lot to talk about. And it is very relaxing, and it is also very spiritually encouraging and inspiring. And at the same time, you kind of feel a little bit lighter because you've emptied all of the burdens and the cares that you've had in your heart onto God while you were on vacation. You know, we got to learn how to rest in the Lord while we're on earth if we think that we're going to have a chance to rest in peace. And then kind of the other thing that I enjoyed was a sense of competition and brotherhood, and that can be something that can be valued on good vacations. We know that there are a lot of families who do vacations and they go a lot to like to sports clinics, or they'll go on to camps and things like that. And honestly, I think like a camp is a great idea, a good solid Christian camp, because you send the kids away and they learn to experience the nature, the natural outdoors. They learn a few skills. They develop great friends. They grow up a little bit, time away from home. And I know it's a great vacation for mom and dad too. It's like, hello, they can actually have some time to just work on their marriage, work on their relationship. Anyway, as far as these pilgrimage experiences, and I do see it almost as an opportunity for some spiritual competition as well, a spiritual type of gymnasium. How strong is my soul? You know, being with these guys is for me a little bit of a spiritual arena, because we talk about our spiritual life. We actually talked about how we're growing in our faith. We challenged each other to make sure that we are praying, you know, together and also on our own. It was, in a way, great for some spiritual competition. Not like who's holier or who's humbler, because as soon as you ask yourself or tell yourself that you're the most humble of them all, you've completely screwed up an understanding of humility. In other words, you have failed epically in being humble and being truly spiritual. But this competition, it kind of requires us to train every aspect of our mind, our soul, and our bodies as well. And these guys are very competitive. Again, one was a B-1 bomber pilot champion. The others, they didn't really explain just how good they were. You know, Eric was a track star and Tim McHugh. And I mean, like, he could pick up like any sporting. I mean, this guy wakes up listening to sports podcasts. He better be listening to this podcast. That's all I can say. But these guys are very athletic, but they're also some of the most humble men that I've met. I mean, I hope that they're not like saying, gosh, why didn't you treat me better on this trip? I fed these guys. I cooked for these guys. But they also know that true competition is supposed to bring the best out in people, not the worst in people. And that's true for whether you're an academic competitor, whether you're a philosopher or a debater. You're supposed to bring the best out of people, not put people down. Talking smack in competition, if it's friendly, sure, certainly, that's awesome. But competition, whether it be physical, even spiritual or mental or artistically, it's supposed to bring the best out in people, which is why I enjoyed my time with these brothers. You know, I wanted to keep this particular episode, I don't want to say light or easy or simple, but I wanted to make sure that you know that in this podcast, while I will be going deeper and having discussions with people even farther away from the church, and you know, this episode is an example of seeing maybe priests in a different light. You know, oftentimes you see us only for the 1 hour at church, and you don't realize that we have lives and that we get a life and that we actually get vacations. And when we do cool things. And they're not expensive and they don't have to be, but we are normal people. So hopefully this was a new experience for you. But this podcast, this show is going to be really reaching out to people who have very diverse opinions from me. And I didn't want it to just be an opportunity for a debate. But you have to know that even though us priests, we do agree on a lot of things, we do have disagreements as well. And we can be competitive with each other. But I can say that knowing these guys for almost 20 years, our conversations have led us all to deeper conversions. And that's what the point is all about. For you to have different conversations and to experience from that a deeper sense of conversion. So as you're all getting ready to go out and prepare for your family vacations, whether a road trip, hey, and if you're fortunate enough to have an expensive vacation, knock yourself out. But just make sure that you also make time for church, you make time for prayer, make time for conversation, and make sure that all of the expensive distractions don't lead to diversions, because that word diversion actually is the same root word as divorce. It's a turning away from each other. Make sure that your vacations lead to conversations, because that can lead to greater conversion. And just make sure that if there are competitions in your family or in sports, or in whatever you're doing, just make sure that it brings the best out in you, and you bring the best out in each other. So between now and the next time we get together to shoot the shiitake, I hope you enjoyed this particular episode. I certainly did, even with all of my friends. In fact, the doorbell's ringing, so it's time for me to go. But between now and then, stay hungry. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Shoot the Shiitake, and thank you to our sponsors, SelectInternationalTours.com, or call 800-842-4842, where they have a passion for the pilgrimage experience and compassion for the pilgrims. And if you want to be a sponsor or advertiser in any way, just simply go to FatherLeoFeeds.com/listen and help us to continue to spread this good news of how shooting the shiitake and just simple conversations can lead to great conversions.